The Years in Fresno, 1979 through 1989. Going to Fresno was an emotional experience. As I flew out of St. Louis, the first thought of the 34 years I had spent in the state, playing for Hickman, Missouri, coaching at Hickman, Higginsville, Centralia, Carthage, and Northeast MO.St., running for Congress, serving as DIR of Motor Vehicles and Licensing, Finance DIR for the MO.State Republican Party and AD at MO.Marrying Peggy, our three kids being born at Boone County Hospital in Columbia and the thousands of people I had met in my years in MO.The tears starting coming down my cheeks as so many precious memories were flooding back and I was leaving the state that had been so very good to me. Yes, Missouri would always be home although we would never live there again. When I landed in Fresno I did not know a single person other than those that interviewed for the DIR of the Bulldog Foundation. But I felt FSU Fresno State University had immense potential even though we were currently at the lower echelons of DIV.I athletics. I immediately got to work on the upcoming membership campaign in which we raised scholarship monies for Bulldog student athletes. The team structured existed and had raised $600,000 the previous year. My chairman of the BDF was Max Flaming, who owned a company that made boxes for the many AG products shipped out of Fresno. Fresno County was the richest AG county in America and probably the most productive AG area in the world. The Central Valley of California is a desert and all AG commodities and lawns are irrigated via the snow runoff waters captured in the dams and lakes in the Sierras and released for AG and drinking water. Some ground wells provided the rest of the water needed. California counties are huge compared to those in the Midwest and East, and Fresno County contained all or part of three national parks: Yosemite, Kings Canyon and Sequoia. After seeing the giant sequoia trees I was stunned and believed that all other forests in the world were man's forests and the giant sequoias was God's personal forest. Fresno ST was a sleeping giant and hopefully I would help awaken it and its potential. Our drive went extremely well as we reached $800,000 and $200,000 over the previous year. A new FB stadium of 30,000 capacity was under construction, all paid for by private donations. We had a great appreciation banquet at the end of the drive and I found a truly gifted artist in Fresno, Joe Garcia, who captured via a poster which I have framed many of the personalities involved in the BDF and the drive. Joe and I would work together on many more Bulldog projects and we formed a partnership of friendship for life. I always called him 11MR. Talent 11. This was 1979 and as we approached 1980 the coming year would be very, very exciting. After the 79 FB season, head FB coach Bob Padilla was let go after a 4-7 season and his two-year stint had not been productive in terms of win/loss record. As the job opened up, the expectation of many locals was that coach Jim Sweeney would return to his old job as he had lit the FB fire that launched the building of a new stadium. Sweeney was then an assistant coach under Bud Wilkinson of the St. Louis FB Cardinals. The interim AO at FSU was Jack Wilcox from the Physics Ed department. Jack was a very good and fair individual. As time went by and Sweeney didn't apply, I threw my hat in the ring based on the three championships we had garnered at NEMSU. Not too long after I applied, Coach Wilkinson was fired from the Cardinals and suddenly Sweeney was out of a job and quickly submitted his application to Jack Wilcox. I immediately went to Wilcox and asked him if I should withdraw my application since Sweeney applied and he said to no. 11, that Sweeney had burned some bridges when he left and that I should stay in the pool of applicants. The university formed a search committee split into a campus group and another, being a booster/community group. The selection boiled down to Sweeney and me. The VP Bill Holmes at FSU, responsible for athletics, had told Wilcox that whoever he selected he would back as the new FB coach. As fate would have it, I was the choice of the campus committee and Sweeney the choice of the booster/community group. Wilcox called me in the morning to tell me I was his choice as the new head FB coach and it would be announced in the afternoon. I was elated. However, Bill Holmes interceded, and countermanded Wilcox's selection of me and named Sweeney as the head coach. Wilcox was devastated, as was I. I'm pretty sure that a few key boosters put pressure on the university admin to hire Sweeney. Wilcox soon withdrew as the interim AO, as the rug had just been pulled out from under him. Now the A.D.S. position is open and several of the BDF leaders wanted me to apply, which I did. In retrospect, knowing what I know now, I never should have applied. The plot thickens. So the university conducts the search and it comes down to me and the A.D. from Idaho St. At this point I get a call from the press. Harold Hawk, who wants to meet with me, and VP Bill Holmes. I assume I have been selected. As we met, the president tells me that they offered the job to the other candidate but that he wanted them to also find a position for his wife, and due to that, the job offer fell through and it was now being offered to me. At least they were honest with me about the circumstances. At this point all the red flags were waving like crazy, as now I was going to report to Bill Holmes, the very VP who broke his promise to Wilcox re-hiring the new FB coach. But my vision for what FSU could become blinded me to the potential challenges of working for a VP who I could not trust. A recipe for disaster. I accepted the job and hired some key people to fill positions that would help us reach our potential. One of my early efforts was to have artist Joe Garcia design a new and unique Bulldog logo. It was an immediate hit. I then got Gotchock's department store to begin carrying and selling Bulldog gear with the new logo. At this point no one was selling Bulldog gear. Joe Levy was the president of Gotchock's and a remarkable man, and he would later play even a greater role in my stay in Fresno. The FB season was about to begin and the FB stadium was undergoing the final touches. To my dismay and that of our FB coaches, the contractor had installed high school goalposts instead of collegiate goalposts. I got that corrected ASAP and in time for the opener with the University of Oregon. We had a full stadium and surprised the Pac-10 team by beating them. Huge win. I found that very quickly I had a variety of major issues to address. Sweeney was somewhat cool towards me, as he knew that I had been selected initially over him, and although he was a very good coach, he did have quite an ego. At the time I became AO basketball under head coach Boyd Grant had really captivated our fan base, called the Red Wave 11 Title IX, was in effect, which required more opportunities for women's athletics, which I totally supported. But our men's program could not financially support both the men's and expanded women's programs without new sources of income. I had to restructure the women's program, dropping women's gymnastics about 9 athletes, and implement women's track. FSU had a good track reputation and it was a common sense decision. I then worked totally behind the scene to bring about a student referendum to gain student body support. To vote for a fee increase to support the minor sports. It passed and was a great asset to our program growth. As AD, I worked closely with the Bulldog Foundation re, several matters. At one meeting I joked that it didn't seem right that our FB ticket office and dressing rooms were on San Jose St. as San Jose State University was a huge rival. There was a very active BDF supporter, Councilman Ted Wills, who agreed and said he would see if the city would change the name to my suggestion, Bulldog Lane. He got it done, as the street was very short and had mostly apartments lining the street. No area opposition at all. More later on this issue. Our men's basketball program was outdrawing all West Coast Universal in basketball attendance. We had sellouts every game and I needed to generate more revenue from our most successful program. In most every other university that restructured their arenas, those that paid the most money sat in the best seats. I visited the University of North Carolina, North Carolina ST and several others, and all of them boiled down to more money, better seating. I felt that this approach would be a big mistake for our program and created a whole new approach to how we should restructure our seating in Celand Arena, 6,500 seating capacity, 1980. To add greater strength to our BDF membership drive, I included fundraising in my approach. I created a three-prong approach to obtaining points, which would dictate where you sat in the arena. You got a number of points on how much money you gave through the BDF. You got points on how much money you raised by working in the BDF drive, and you got your remaining points depending on how long you had been a season ticket holder, rewarding loyalty. I wanted to be able to say that at midcourt one person might sit there based on their giving level and the person next to them got there by sweat equity by working successfully in the BDF drive. In fact, more points could be earned in the BDF drive than in what you gave. I wanted my formula to eliminate the fat cat label that the rest of the major colleges had embraced. The majority of our better seats went to fans that obtained their points using all three-point approaches, giving, working in the drive and loyalty of years being a season ticket holder. I had a few complaints when it was finally approved, but it took 2 years for VP Bill Holmes to approve its implementation. In the first year it generated $1 million of new revenue and really invigorated the BDF membership drive. Of all the things I did, this approach and formula was critically important for BDF drives for years thereafter. We were now generating over $1 million in our 1 month BDF drive using about 300 volunteers. We had different BDF membership levels which included packages using FB, BB tickets as our primary draw. One of my new hires was Dan Taylor, who was a local TV sports anchor. Dan had a very creative mind and was perfect for the job. Dan lined up several appearances of the two most popular sports personalities in America, the Chicken and Crazy George. Both could fire up a stadium or arena, and they helped make the game an even better event. In constantly thinking about how we might generate new revenues, I was looking through our FB and BB game programs. It struck me that the most marketable page in the program was never sold. That page was the cover. In my mind, the challenge was how to inject commercial sponsorship into the cover without detracting from the event, ourselves and our opponents. My solution: use humor in the form of a cartoon which embraced ourselves, our opponent and the event FB or BB. I again turned to artist Joe Garcia. I would sit down with Joe and explain each game opponent and our sponsor and describe to him how I saw the cartoon in my mind. I can't draw a straight line with a ruler, but I can envision graphics. I swear Joe could step into my mind and see exactly what I saw, and his artwork was always right on target. So we sold $50,000 of game program covers to sponsors, introduced them at halftime and gave them a signed game ball from the head coach. We were the only college in America doing this. The covers were so good many fans treated them like baseball cards. Nothing I did came easy with Bill Holmes, and he was largely sports ignorant. Perhaps the boiling point was reached when I invited the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders to perform at one of our games. In the 81 season we were to play Cal State Fullerton at their place. They didn't draw flies. I offered them $75,000 to come play us at home, which was a far more money than they would earn at home. They accepted. Knowing that they would be a weak draw at home, I felt that if I could get the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders to perform, that it would really enhance our draw. At the time they were easily the greatest performing cheerleader group in all of Pro FB. When they accepted and it was announced, the campus women's livers came unglued. Apparently women were supposed to do only what they felt was appropriate. Being a cheerleader was demeaning in their mind. I felt and expressed that if you truly believed in women's rights, then women should be able to choose being a doctor, lawyer, corporate CEO, or a cheerleader. Their arrival became controversial in some circles, primarily on campus. As game day approached, I met them at the Fresno airport the day before the game. As they embarked from their plane, I gathered them together in the airport and felt that I would let them know of some of the controversy, and to put them at ease I made some joke along the lines that we had some faculty members who were opposed to them coming top perform, but we were having them psychologically analyzed to determine their opposition. Got a good laugh and they headed to their motel, as they were doing a free performance on campus, which was the day before the game. They did a tremendous job. Well, I did not know that their arrival and my welcome and attempt at humor was being covered by the Fresno Bee newspaper. The next morning, Saturday, I got a very irate call from President Harold Hockery, my quoted statement appearing in the paper. Apparently he was catching hell from several faculty members. I was wrong to use the illustration that I did, even in jest, and this proved to be a fatal error on my part. That evening we had a far better crowd for Fullerton than normal. It started to rain at half, but the cheerleaders performed flawlessly. They got a great response, and when they left and the rain continued, about half our crowd left with them. Their appearance and attendance proved the strength of their drawing power. It had been a good strategy to have invited them. I was in the second year of my initial two-year contract, and soon after the admin informed me that my AO contract would not be renewed. However, they wanted me to become their DIR of their brand new FSU Academic Foundation basis on my success with the BDF. I really wanted to stay in collegiate athletics and turn the job offer down, which meant my association with FSU was ended. I also need to note that sometime in late summer or early fall I got a call from the retired AO at FSU telling me that he had heard that one of our boosters was furnishing a car to a FB player. I informed the VP Bill Holmes of what I had been told and that we needed to report this to the NCAA. Once again I had to report a violation to the NCAA. But the admin felt they needed to kill the messenger, not those who broke the rules. I can never prove this, but I do believe that to keep the NCAA happy that either I had to go or the FB coach had to go. Based on a key booster's attitude and my Dallas Cowboy invitation, I became expendable as AO but not as the new head of their academic foundation. Go figure. I learned a very valuable lesson. As an AO, you need to report directly to the president. Athletics is too visible and potentially too volatile to report to someone between you and to press. I was twice bit and twice shy. Two more memorable times at FSU was first when Coach Bob Bennett, head baseball coach, came to tell me that his baseball scoreboard blew down and needed to be replaced. I asked Bob, "How much do you think a new one will cost?" He said, "About $10,000. So I went out and got him a $135,000 scoreboard with a message center board on both the playing side of the field and the backside facing the major street seater between the main campus and the football and baseball field. I got Pepsi and Me and Ed's Pizza to sponsor the entire cost. Probably one of the best collegiate baseball scoreboards in the country. I was selling the backside spots like hotcakes in either 30 or 60 second segments at 9 cents a spot, 24 hours a day, every day. For some reason the admin stopped my backside spots, but several years later put up their own message center board on the corner and made money just as I intended. Great idea, but I was apparently ahead of my time. The next memorable occasion was when Coach Red Estes came to me about his need for an earth berm between the street seater and his running track. We did not have the money to do it, but I approached the Corps of Engineers to see if they would construct it as a training project. They said yes. Can't remember if it was totally free, but if there was any cost, it was minimal. I also encouraged each coach to grow their own booster club with but one stipulation. That they have but one major fundraiser a year and that it did not compete with the BDF drive. They flourished. In retrospect, I should not have taken the job as AO under the circumstances involving the FB fiasco, but in my 2 years we did get a minor sports fee passed, strengthened women's athletics, dramatically improved basketball revenues, initiated the plan for a new men's baseball stadium, initiated the first Bulldog licensing agreement, and restructured the athletic support staff to better serve our coaches, student athletes and fans. While my tenure ended in the fall of 82, the men's basketball team in 82/83 went on to win the NIT. I was there as a proud Bulldog, thrilled with the success of Boyd Grant and his players. By the way, one of those starters was Desi Barmore, the basketball player that was seen by the assistant SMO coach and reported by me to the NCAA. When I went to Fresno, I convinced Desi to get a new start with FSU. He was a big factor in our NIT championship and played pro ball abroad for several years after his days at FSU. We made lemonade out of lemons. One of the criticisms I learned about that came from the FSU admin was that when the name change occurred from San Jose ST to Bulldog Lane was that I didn't go through campus planning. I never imagined that a city street name change would even be a factor for campus planning. That's how petty it got. During my days at FSU, the NCAA had a hearing re, the SEMO finding. I was invited to attend. Basically, I just restated what I had already put in writing when I self-reported our possible violation, and I found the lead NCAA staff member to be a real jerk. He tried to equate our student assistants giving visiting recruits a used practice t-shirt like we were giving them a new car. The whole affair was a farce. From FSU to the banking world.